The Sword of Fire, Book 1, Azulon, by William R. McGrath. Copyright 2007, William R. McGrath. Narration by James H. Brinkley. Chapter 3, Part 2. The meeting ended, and the men in the room made their way to the door without a word. The chamber door closed, and Sargon had the room to himself. After a moment he heard a slight scraping of stone behind him, but did not turn around. He knew that sound to be the opening of a door concealed in the wall. That door led to a secret tunnel, and only he himself and one other knew of its existence.
"Sargon, you did well, but you did not do all,"
came a voice from the tunnel's entrance. Sargon turned to face a man so old and gaunt, Sargon wondered that he could draw breath, let alone walk each time they met. The old man's thin skin stretched like parchment over his bare skull. His bony hands were all protruding knuckles and twisted blue veins. His white robes hung loosely about him and were overly long in back, so that they hissed against the floor when he walked. Sargon always believed that the effect was deliberate. He reminded Sargon of a very old and angry cobra, searching for one last victim to set his fangs into before he died. Sargon bowed his head and greeted the old man in the expected manner.
"Welcome, Aesculapius, master of the great white brotherhood, greatest of the round table of nine, philosopher king of philosopher kings, high priest of the Illuminati, I greet thee."
Aesculapius bowed his head in acceptance of the praise, though he knew Sargon's loyalty was to none but Sargon. The old sorcerer came to the council table and sat down, taking Sargon's seat at the head of the table.
"You made no mention of our agreement regarding Prince Daniel at your council with the merchants,"
said Aesculapius. He pronounced merchants with a hiss, as if the word was distasteful to him.
"Our own discussions about the prince do not concern them," replied Sargon. "Keeping one secret of this size will be difficult enough without compounding the problem with two."
Aesculapius's eyes grew cold.
"I have told you that both Argus and his son are a danger to us. The son the more so, for the prophecy concerns the boy. The father is just the one who sired him."
"Prince Daniel can be dealt with much more easily in Logres, in a hunting accident perhaps, than here with his father's guards watching," replied Sargon.
The moneylender hated these religious fanatics, but Sargon needed the Illuminati, for they controlled the secret of the transfer boxes. Whether, as he sometimes suspected, they stumbled upon some long-dead alchemy, or, as they claimed, created it themselves, he could not say with any certainty, but he did know that they held the keys to the success of his grandest plan. He himself could never be king in Azulon, but what if he could choose and control the next king? Would that not be just as good? The transfer boxes would give him the power to do precisely that. Aesculapius tilted his head back and closed his eyes. "Oh no," thought Sargon. "Here it comes." The sorcerer began to speak in a low, breathless voice.
"In fire's ring, where angels sing, in holy's home, sheathed in stone, where blood was spilt, one for all, to make amends for the fall. The first of swords awaits the finding of one whose oath blood is binding. Wisdom, strength, honor finding, to whose arm the sword is binding. When we received this prophecy, we were glad,
said Aesculapius,
for we thought that this great weapon, the first of swords, was to be given into our hands. But another prophecy came. It seems destiny has given us a rival, and that second prophecy was this. When True West's king dies without heir, and elder successor marries the fair, Scion lone shall find under stone the first of swords in fire's home. Awaits your master an avenging death, ashes for words and smoke for breath. In all the world there is no room for your prince to flee his doom.
Yes, yes, you have told me of these prophecies from your soothsayers before, said Sargon.
Aesculapius's eyes snapped open as he turned on Sargon.
They were given in the year of Argus's birth, though at that time we had no way of knowing that they referred to him. Now we have seen with our own eyes King Absalom die without an heir, and Argus, with only a male child, take his place on the throne. We did not wish to move against the House of Asher directly, hoping that the greatest of weapons would be delivered to us before this day. But my master does not wish to wait any longer.
Your master?
Sargon was surprised. This was the first time Aesculapius had referred to any authority in the Illuminati higher than himself. The old man's eyes came alive.
There is a man, great in power and secret knowledge, like one of the enlightened ones of old. He is our earthly prince and our strength. He must live, for if he dies, my order dies with him. My master's master has ordained it.
His master's master, thought Sargon. This old scarecrow never speaks but in riddles.
Sargon was tiring of Aesculapius more quickly than usual, but he smiled when he answered nonetheless.
I did not know the matter was of such urgency. It will be my pleasure to see to a result that pleases you, your master, his master, and any other masters you have.
Do not even think to patronize me, child,
said the sorcerer's eyes flashing.
You will do as I say to gain your precious black boxes. But know this, Prince Daniel will be dead before he leaves Azulon, or you will stand before us and explain why you failed.
With that, Aesculapius turned and disappeared into the blackness of the tunnel. Sargon pressed the concealed lever and the door closed, the wall becoming a wall once more. He stood for a time staring at the wall, then, satisfied that the sorcerer would not return, closed the hidden grate that had allowed the sorcerer to hear what was said in the room.
Pity I can't have the tunnel sealed up with that snake within it, he thought.
Sargon knew he could deal with this new lore of Argus. In fact, it would serve him well, for it ensured that the hands of the other guild members were as bloody as his, and would not give his name in any future investigation, lest they be caught up in the net as well. All in all, once Argus was dead, Sargon's position as leader of the Builders' Guild would be strengthened. That the king's death had been planned long in advance, and had been ordered by those outside of the guild, would never be known. To the retired senator, and the fat banker, and the others, it would be Sargon who had killed a king. It would be Sargon who could get big things done quickly. Sargon found that he was suddenly very hungry. A bowl of apples, a remnant of the previous autumn's crop, and stored in the cold cellar, was set upon the council table. Sargon reached out and took the topmost apple from the pile. As he did this, two more apples fell from the bowl and onto the table. He was about to put them back in the bowl when he stopped, held up the first apple and smiled.
"Here we have useful fools like Dew," Sargon thought to himself,
and then held up a second apple before him.
"And here a pack of wolves I lead, but dare not turn my back on."
He placed both pieces of fruit in his left hand and took up the third in his right.
"And here we have those lunatics of the Illuminati."
Smiling to himself, he began to toss first one apple, then the other into the air, juggling them.
"Keep this one happy, then that one, now this one here."
He kept the fruit flying through the air.
"I'm not a moneylender, I'm a juggler! Ha ha!"
He threw the fruit higher and began to laugh. He tried to catch an apple in his mouth, but missed. Sargon bounced the falling fruit off his knee and deftly caught it on the top of his foot, where it miraculously stayed balanced. Surprised at himself, he took another apple from the bowl and began to juggle those three, while standing on one foot balancing the fourth. Growing more daring, he kicked the apple from his foot into the air and tried to add it to the three, but missed, and all four apples fell to the floor.
"Well, sir," he said out loud, "you should know how to quit while you are ahead. And you do."
With that, Sargon left the chamber.
Azulon by William R. McGrath. Copyright 2007, William R. McGrath. Narration by James H. Brinkley. For more information on this book series, please go to www.theswordoffire.com.